Welcome to Breaking It Down, a podcast where I help business owners, executives, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and leaders on how to break through their business and careers. I'm your host, Michelle Falcon, entrepreneur, author, keynote speaker, and businessinsider.com featured entrepreneur. Let's get started. Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Breaking It Down. As always, I'm Michelle Falcon. If we haven't connected on LinkedIn, below in the show notes is a link to my LinkedIn. Click that link and let's connect over there. Today, my guest is Tanya De Silva, a clinical director based in Toronto, Canada. Tanya, I understand that you have been learning how to golf. So what has the hardest thing been about learning this new sport?
For me, I feel like I got the concept of like hitting it and getting it into the putt, but actually getting it into the putt and knowing how to get it in the direction I want it to go into and the speed, that's probably the most difficult thing.
Are you patient with it or do you get frustrated easily?
I feel like luckily I have a lot of patience because of what I do. So I'm like super focused, and with all the time that we have, I have time to practice. So it's been helping.
That's fair. And speaking of which, describe what you do.
So for us, so I have a clinic called Behavior Matters, and our main focus is mental health in children, youth, and families. So we support families individually, so in one-on-one therapy, family therapy. We do group programs as well, so teaching kids social skills, emotional regulation skills. And we go into schools and other community centers and run workshops, basically focusing on the same thing, like social skills, emotional regulation, and overall mental health.
Fantastic. Tanya, what questions do you have for me?
So I got a couple. So let's see. So first question, like I was telling you, I find that I micromanage a lot. So that's something that in terms of leadership, I've been working on. So my question is, how do you motivate your team to hit goals and basically to have the same drive in terms of growing the company without micromanaging and getting involved in every little thing?
Good question, and one that I've been asked before in one way or another. First, the micromanaging part could be on you in the sense that you have to ask yourself, have I ever worked with anybody that I trust through and through? Mm-hmm. If I have in the past, dissect what that relationship was like and how you got there. If you haven't, then you really need to audit probably your process. How am I hiring individuals who I will ultimately need to trust so that I can give them their responsibilities and I can focus on what I need to focus on and not be hovering over their activities? So that could come down to what type of questions am I asking in the interview process to audit whether this partner or this employee is going to be able to fit within the type of role that I need them to, so that I can give them their responsibilities and they can run with it. In regards to how can I get somebody to care about growing the business as much as me, you can't. You can't, right? I can't either. At the end of the day, like, silently they're going to be asking, you know, what's in it for me? Sure, paying them to do their job is what you're legally required to do, so that's the bare minimum. Giving them an incentive to help grow the business, of course, is traditionally helped, but are they going to care about the business while they're on vacation like you probably do? No. So I would recommend redefining what your expectation is of them about caring about the business. And you can do that, but it's never going to be on par with your expectation of caring for the business. Netflix is a good example. If you go to Netflix and just type in Netflix core values, one of their core values, and I'm paraphrasing on what it is like you care about Netflix success or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. You can help weave that into the culture of the company, reward people along the way for doing things that exemplify that level of care that you have. So there's many little tactical things you can do, starting from how you interview, how you onboard, how you reward, how you recognize. But at the end of the day, nobody's going to care as much as you. And that's okay. But just kind of recalibrate your expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes sense. It's funny because when you were saying that, I started thinking about the care component. And even in my interview process, I always ask about, you know, why they got into the field, what makes them care about the field. And it's things like that that I think kind of really add to how well they do in their role because they have an emotional connection to what they're doing. So yeah, that makes sense.
Fantastic. Thank you for that question. What else you got for me?
So, and you kind of touched on this already, but other than competitive rates and preferred hours, how else do you become the employer of choice?
So let me unpack that question. Do you pay as much as your competitors?
So it depends. So if it's private practice, because we're a private clinic, yes. But if it's, you know, a government funded agency, because mental health is so widespread, it really depends, I guess, kind of what category you fall into. So private practice, sure. But if we're looking at competitors in terms of publicly funded, no. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because a lot of their peers probably work for an organization that's unionized as well, mm-hmm. right? Okay.
Yeah.
So to your question, it really depends on the demographic of the people you've hired. And I'll give you an example, a real world example, one that really impacted my life. When I was working for 1-800-GOT-JUNK, a very obscure company, of course, like I wasn't working for them because I loved junk removal and I woke up every day super passionate about the industry. I didn't at all. But what I did equate value to was the knowledge of learning how to grow a business, because I knew one day I was going to take everything that they were teaching me about entrepreneurship, marketing, company culture, and the list goes on and on and on. And that for me, and this is an arbitrary number, I was like, that is worth $100,000 a year, plus what they're actually paying me. One day I'm going to use this as a springboard to something else. So for team members that you might be hiring, perhaps they are, you know, a youthful group. They admire your leadership. They admire that you've gone on your own and become an entrepreneur. And in different words than this, you can say, hey team, I'm going to pay you on time. And those wages will be competitive. But what I'm also going to do that you're not going to get anywhere else is I'm going to give you learning and development opportunities to develop your careers with this company or without. And again, I'm paraphrasing this for you, but I would even go as far as saying, if you use that knowledge to help grow this practice and grow the business, then I will pay you more. Mm-hmm. But if you so choose to take this knowledge and start something on your own, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. So you want your team members to feel like, yes, maybe I could be making more somewhere else, but the value that Tanya is giving me in terms of education is priceless. And that's why I'm staying here. That's why I'm caring about the business on my vacation and thinking about it when maybe a regular employee wouldn't, and they're just going, checking in 9 to 5 and leaving. So there's a skill set that you have that I think I think your employees, current and future employees, will value and put a monetary value next to that. While I was at 1-800-GOT-JUNK, I could have been earning more. I actually got an offer to go work for Lululemon in their call center that was going to pay me more. But I turned it down because I didn't feel like they were going to give me the same education around entrepreneurship that 1-800-GOT-JUNK was. So that's what kept me there. So I would evaluate that. Like, other than money, what else could I be giving to my team members aside from rewards, but like education that's going to help them propel their career, and be willing to let them walk if they feel like they can do their own thing. And that's a hard thing for some entrepreneurs to digest, because essentially what I'm saying is let them go compete with you. Mm-hmm. Like people will always remember who set them up for success. And at the very least, you can sleep well at night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I answer that.
Yeah, it's honestly a complete reframe in like how you're looking at employees and their experience and stuff in general.
Well, yes. And to continue on that, like I have this 3-to-1 rule, and I need to rebrand that. But essentially what it means is for every team member that I hire and employ, I'm going to do 3 things for you. And as I mentioned, I'm going to pay you, I'm going to pay you on time, and I'm going to give you invaluable learning and development opportunities. The one thing that I'm asking you to do in return for those 3 things is bring your whole self to work every day, like literally every day. Just do that one thing. And, you know, of course, within bringing your whole self to work, that's going to be, you know, doing your job properly, exceeding the expectations of our patients, representing our company well, and living within our values and so forth. There's a myriad of things that happen within that. But then when your team members start to call in sick when they're not sick or whatever the case might be, which is not meeting your expectations, you go back to what you had said during onboard and be like, hey, whatever happened to our agreement? I said I was going to do these 3 things, and I have. Why haven't you held your end of the bargain? So I'd look into that and kind of framing that and presenting that during immediately after you hire somebody and during onboard, because it sets a precedent, right? And I don't know your industry as well as you, but I'm certain that that would be new to the industry, where new employers are like, whoa, I work with somebody that's much different than any other person I've worked with in this industry. And then word of mouth starts happening. Like people are going to start equating your practice as being something that's different, like an experience that they've never seen before in the industry. And like great things happen after that.
I love that 3-to-1 ratio.
Yeah, I like it too, but it needs a better brand. As I was saying, I was like, oh, I don't like that. But the idea. And
the concept,
The concept works. And then did you have a question around customer experience? I think you did.
Yeah. So I had, more of a general question. So I know you talk a lot about, you know, company culture as well and customer experience. So I guess these are kind of 2 different ends, but in terms of improving company culture, I think we've kind of already touched on that a little bit too, but that 3-to-1 ratio, all that other stuff, I feel like can go in there. But if we're looking at customer experience, so for us, I do already believe that we offer a really great customer experience, but I'm wondering, when you're thinking about customer experience, is there a framework or like something that you should be looking at to make sure that, okay, you're hitting exactly what you need to be hitting to provide the best customer experience possible?
Yeah. Whenever I'm working with anybody, whether it's for my own businesses or speaking to individuals like yourself, I start with like wants and needs. So you can go to your client base and maybe you have a customer advisory board that you create. Like, let's say there's like 4 clients of yours that you ask their permission to speak with them on a quarterly basis to really understand their sentiment about the experience that you're delivering, but also the industry experience. So then now comes the want versus the need. You can ask your clients, like, you know, what do you want from us? Right. And I'm certain they're going to say things like, I want results. I want our appointments to start on time. And I want clear pricing. Let's say I'm just spitballing right now. Those are the things that they currently want, given the information that they're provided, right? Which is the experience that you have delivered to them. So you're going to gather that information, but that's not enough. What you have to really focus on is what your clients need. And perhaps that you're experiencing this right now. Given everything that's happened with COVID-19, when you're building a customer experience based on what customers need, the challenge is that customers do not know what they need until it is presented to them. And they'll say, yes, that's what I want. That's what I need. So let me give you a really good example. When Apple came out with the iPod, before the iPod, we had MP3 players. And if Apple had come to prospective customers like you and I and had asked us, what do you want for your music listening pleasures? We probably would have said something that was similar to the MP3 player, like, give it to us in a variety of different colors, and I would like it to hold 10,000 songs, where the last version maybe had 1,000. That's not really anything revolutionary. That's just an iteration of what was currently in the marketplace. This is where the want and the need make sense. What Apple created was the iPod. And the single feature, for me at least, that made the iPod better than MP3 player was the scroll wheel. Because if you remember having an MP3 player, getting from song 1 to 50, you had to press the button 50 times. Mm-hmm. Or if you were wise, you could hold it down and then it would kind of speed up that process to get to song 50, but then your thumb hurt, right? The scroll wheel allowed you to get from song 1 to 50 just by quickly turning your finger in a circular fashion. I would have never told Apple, that's what I need, right? Because I didn't know that I needed it until it was presented to me. And that's just innovation. Mm-hmm. But going back to your question, you can go back and speak to your customers regularly to understand what they want. And they're going to tell you things that are obvious, right? Maybe they'll say one thing that you're like, oh, I didn't know that you wanted that. But for the most part, you're going to be like, I know that already. What you and your team have to do is create what your customers need. But mm-hmm. you can only do that by your own critical thinking and maybe some of your team members as well. So your responsibility as an entrepreneur is to have some what I call kumbaya time. Maybe that's like, out of the city, out of the office, wherever you do your deepest thinking. Like Sarah Blakely from Spanx said in her masterclass that she does her deepest thinking while driving. So she'll randomly get out of her office and just go for a drive with no destination, just to do critical thinking. For me, I do my best thinking where it's quiet, like up at a cottage. So Tanya needs to go and get out of the city, turn off her email, and just be like, okay, think. What do my customers need? What can I invent on their behalf and produce it for them and deliver it at a reasonable price or whatever the case might be? But then you could also invite those team members. I mentioned to you earlier that one thing that you can do to impact employee engagement in lieu of paying them more is give them the opportunity to act like senior leaders and have the ability to build with you. So let's say you had a team of 10, two of them have shown the ability to really think critically. They're super engaged. And if you go to them and say, hey, I this is what I'm trying to create. I would like you to come join me. And maybe that's an afternoon away at, a resort nearby, Toronto or wherever. And you spend the afternoon with them or the day thinking about what your customers need and create those experiences for them. Not only will you leave that session with those newfound customer experience ideas, but now you've supercharged those team members that you invited. Now I'm going to preemptively answer something you might be thinking, or any listener might be thinking, what about the other team members that you didn't invite? Are they going to be demoralized that you didn't invite them? Tough luck. I'm sorry. This isn't. It's if they hadn't proven that they deserve the opportunity to join the leader, well, then they have some work to do on their own. Like, this isn't eighth place participation ribbons. It's like, look, these two individuals proved to me that they could be involved in this conversation. If you want to be invited the next time, well, I have a simple solution. Behave like these two. Right.
Mm-hmm. So I think it would be motivating. Like, I'm thinking if I was in that position, I'd be like, oh, so that can be me. Like, I'd want to work towards that.
I think so too, but you probably have thicker skin than other people, right? Like if you think of, if some people might be offended and be like, what the heck, blah, blah, blah. You know, for me, it's just like, don't be so emotional. And, you know, I can tell you exactly what these two individuals did to kind of, you know, earn that seat at the table, but then you're going to have to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and that's kind of the competitive nature of entrepreneurship and in business perhaps. So that was a really long-winded answer to your question. I didn't intend it for it to be that long, but that's what I would do. While it might seem invaluable, or sorry, while it might seem like perhaps a waste of time to ask customers what they want, because they're probably going to tell you things that you already know, it's still good for customer sentiment. They will still feel appreciated that you're asking them for their feedback. So at the very least, do it for those reasons. But you never know. They might tell you something and you're like, I never thought of that. And you're probably going to be like, I should have thought of that. But
you know what's interesting? I find in our industry, because it is mental health, like if you ask parents or people what they need, they know exactly what they need because it's, you know, emotional relief or it's whatever it might be. Sometimes it's not packaged in the best way, but still I find that information really beneficial to us because we're like, okay, this is what you need. Now, what can we actually create so that you get those needs in a like realistic way?
Absolutely. And this is like, this is right up your alley for your business in terms of, you know, being able to support people and gather the information that you need. So, and you're in direct contact with your customers. You have that one-to-one relationship already. So I think that, you know, it's right up your alley to kind of follow through on that. But then I would be really interested to hear if you do so move in the direction of being like, I'm going to get a couple high performers on my team to come join me and we're going to do some critical thinking and we're going to solve this, and come up with our scroll wheel equivalent. And then if you develop it, package it together for your clients, like you are going to catapult yourself past your competitors. And then there'll be that industry chatter being like, their clinic did what? Right now we got to catch up. And I referenced the COVID-19 thing because before recording, you had mentioned that immediately when COVID-19 kind of hit, your clients were asking, what are you going to do, right? Can you share kind of, if it's not confidential or anything, but like what was mentioned and what did you do to solve that customer experience challenge?
Well, yeah. So for us, like we were actually 2 weeks out of starting our social emotional groups. And we had like over 50 kids that were supposed to start. And the whole purpose of our groups is to have kids in office where they're meeting peers, they're making friends, and they're learning and practicing social and emotional skills. So for us, like even before parents started asking us, we were looking at that where we're like, what are we going to do? Right. So, and then obviously the questions started coming in where parents are like, well, if it's not happening, you know, we're going to pull out or we're going to wait. So it made us really think about, okay, what can we do? So in a time where people need connection more than anything, where they need to be learning emotional regulation skills and adapting to the new way of socializing. Like we really, really believed that what we were offering was so crucial, but we were up against that wall of, well, you can't have people in your office. So for us, we literally sat and we kind of did this where it was like a team brainstorm, where we're like, how are we going to adapt so that they are still making connections, that it's still interactive. And we worked away on it and we moved everything online and we adapted and we're 6 weeks in and we've got so many emails. It's so funny from families being like, I didn't know what you were going to do, you know, when we agreed to try it, but we're so happy that we stayed on board. So that's the part where us getting together and brainstorming and just kind of taking that leap and doing it and knowing that we had like a good product and that we'd figure it out. That's what I think was really helpful. And then the feedback from parents that kind of came naturally with them just sending us emails. And we actually did check in at midpoint. And it was, again, a lot of really positive feedback. So that was helpful to know how they feel about it. But also just to think about, okay, how are we going to adapt? We know there's a need here and we need to get it out in a way that might not be traditional.
Awesome. Tanya, where can listeners find you? Where are you most active online?
So they can find us on Instagram at Behavior Matters, or they can check us out at behaviormatters.ca.
Fantastic, everybody. I'm going to link up both of those links below in the show notes. So please do me a favor by connecting with Tanya and her team, either on our website or on Instagram. And everybody, you know where to find me. I am my most active on LinkedIn. So find me there. Tanya, thank you so much for jumping on, and thank you for your questions.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If your company is interested in inviting me to keynote speak at a company event, be sure to visit my website, michellefalcon.com. If you have any questions on what you heard on this episode, email me directly at michelle@michellefalcon.com. I'll see you on the next episode.